This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back to Michigan Insider Sports Talk, 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. Listen, not much can bring me down this morning, right? You know, Michigan basketball is dismal season. A dismal end to it is much like the majority of the games here in the second half. We have no Craig Ross this morning, as Craig is under the weather, and I'm sad about that. But Brian Cook and Seth Fisher, when Ohio State gets absolutely embarrassed when they made all of these tremendous improvements, according to them, during the offseason, that's going to catapult them to more success. And Michigan is taking all these L's, because if you listen to Ohio State folks, Michigan is trending towards, they are on the precipice of disaster. The NCAA is going to swoop in and take away all of these accomplishments, and they've lost all of these coaches, and they lost all of these. It is a train wreck in Ann Arbor to lose a coach, a running backs coach, no less, who had a five-star number one running back in the country and the number one running back in the portal. Both of those guys there, to lose that guy to first-year coach Michigan and first-year coach Jerome Moore. I don't know if it could get much worse than that for Ryan Day. And I don't know if I could be much happier this morning. Brian Cook, how are you?
I'm well. I mean, I think it can get worse for Ryan Day on November next year.
Are you calling your shot right now, Ryan?
Well, so we should talk about this. Like, all the discussion in the offseason has how been like Michigan is a poverty program now, and Ohio State has won the offseason, and they're going to be the national champions next year. And then you have your running backs coach leaving in the middle of spring practice to go to Michigan. And I think what that says about the Ohio State program is that the wheels might be coming off. Like, not like 6-6 coming off, but they've brought in all these guys. Everybody is feeling this tremendous pressure. You still have Larry Johnson, who loathes the defensive coordinator, being their defensive line coach. I think it speaks to like the fact that the culture in that program is not great right now. And I think what Alford is looking at is job security, because he's going to have job security at Michigan, because Sherrone Moore is going to get 4 or 5 years to see what he can do. Ryan Day could be out at Ohio State this season.
Yes, he could.
December 1st. I mean, if he makes it to the afternoon, what's the game over at 3:30? 3:30 on November 30th. There's your...
If Michigan wins that game, Brian Day isn't making it to the press conference.
Yeah. No matter if he wins every other game this season.
Do you guys see the Utah State women's basketball coach? This is a little Bush League, but they fire her before the press conference and send her to the press conference anyway. That's Ryan Day at home in November. And to your point, Brian, this absolutely speaks to that. Even if we don't get into the other things that I think it says about Ryan Day, I think even Ohio State fans would concede. I'm not scamming you with this, O State fans. Let's communicate for a second. Can't we all agree that Ryan Day is coaching for his job this year? If he loses to Michigan, and Ohio State loses to Michigan this year, he is out, and everyone knows it.
That's absolutely true. Go ahead, Seth.
The seasons have gotten harder. I've got to pull up Ohio State's schedule, but I know Michigan's schedule, and theirs is not much easier. So if he goes perfectly through that season, right, Could they really do, like, can you fire a guy if he's like, because yes. you lose to Michigan, you could still go to yes. the Big Ten championship and beat Michigan again the next day, like the next week, right? This is like a weird future now where the Michigan-Ohio State game is just like the first round of the playoff. So, I mean, you could, they play, they got a little easier than we got, but they got Penn State. Nebraska might be better this year. They get Oregon. They get Iowa. Michigan State, West. God, how'd they get such an easy schedule? Man, they're playing Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall in the non-conference.
So you got to answer your own question. Yes, you could go through that easy schedule, lose to Michigan, and it's over. They have spared no expense. Yeah. They've literally given the man everything he could possibly want. Every player in the portal, every coach. He went and got a head coach to be his two head coaches. To be his coordinators first in Bill O'Brien, and then hey, that didn't work. You know, he left, and you go get Chip Kelly. You fired everyone on defense the last couple of years and replaced them. There is literally nothing else you can do to improve. There's nothing else you can change but the head coach if you're Ohio State.
No, I mean, he's everybody in the world knows that if he goes 0-4 against Michigan with losing to Sherrod Moore for a second time, he's done. But you would think that a guy who's got Travion Henderson and the Judkins kid from Ole Miss as his running back room would be like, well, you know, I can find a job after this, you know? Like, these guys are going to go off, and then they're going to go to the NFL draft. And people are like, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely hireable. But he decided to pull the ripcord before all that happened. And, you know, I think that maybe he's frustrated at the fact that what he sees Ohio State doing is a Ryan Day problem. So for the last 2 years, Michigan has exploited the fact that their short yardage rushing game is awful. They were something like 104th in EPA per rush until they ditched their boundary zone stretch this year. So for the duration of Ryan Day's career, it feels like that the Ohio State running game has been an arrow straight down. I don't think that's an Alford problem, right? That's a Ryan Day problem. That's why he's running jet sweeps on 3rd and 2 against Notre Dame. That's why he's getting into the end zone against Notre Dame with a 240-pound back, because Notre Dame only has 10 guys on the field. You know, it feels like he's looking at Sherrod Moore, what he's done with the offensive line, what Michigan has done with their run game, and he's like, this is where I need to be. I don't need to be with this Bill Walsh wannabe who's running a West Coast offense and expecting to win in November in the Big Ten. So it does feel like this is a business decision for him. And when is the last time someone making a business decision was like, I'm going to go with Michigan? It's been a minute. And I'm sure that the connections between Sherrod Moore and Alford help too, because these guys know each other. But I think that speaks very highly of Sherrod as well. Like, he was able to get guys who shouldn't be gettable, or in the case of Adegoke, the Texans defensive backs coach, that shouldn't even been a conversation, right? Like, he should have called that guy and he would be like, no thanks, portal, I'm out. But he was on the verge of taking this job when the Texans were, you know, like, we need to retain this guy. And, you know, I just think that speaks to who he is, how he's going to recruit, like, just kind of what kind of a person is that people want to come work for him. Mm-hmm. Now, people came to work for Jim Harbaugh, but I think they knew going in that this was going to be a trial. And you know, it's to Jim Harbaugh's credit that he was so good at other aspects of the job that the interpersonal stuff that he was not that good at didn't actually, you know, bring him down. I think Sherrod Moore probably isn't as good at Jim Harbaugh's various things, because Jim Harbaugh is, you know, one of one. But I do think that the whole shape of the hiring process here, he lost a couple of guys to the NFL, but the guys he hired, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, and now with Alford, are close to the best case scenario. And so I feel like you can't really tell anything about the Moore era just yet, but as far as you can be encouraged, I am encouraged.
Yeah, this is a great point. I want you to, let me set this up for you, Seth, because I want you to react to it. I think you seized upon a big takeaway from this whole thing about Sherrod. I could spend all day on the Buckeyes, you know that. But the way that he is navigated the hiring, the twists and turns of the hiring process. If there was a concern about 38 years old, like we had seen him handle the adversity of being thrust from being a tight ends coach to an O-line coach with no experience, O-line coach to offensive coordinator, handled that well, offensive coordinator to head coach in four games, but most notably in the last three games last year, no problem, right? If there was a place where 38 years old was going to show up, it was going to be in the hiring process. How do you, I mean, you can't have an extensive list of coaching contacts. How do you handle if, you know, candidate A is off the board or guys you thought you were going to retain were going to leave, and every single curveball that has come his way, he is adjusted to. You mentioned Adegoke. He had Steve. Steve had agreed to take the job, as you know, Texans reporters have reported. Now, the reason that blew up is because I think his agent leaked it. Like, he had agreed to take the job, and then we saw Matt Zenas, who does a guy. I don't know. Zenas is in tight with these agents, man. I think he does a terrific job of getting these scoops. And Zenas reports it before Steve Adegoke has even told D'Amico Ryans that he's leaving for Michigan. So he gets to the office. I think I talked about this on the roundtable. And D'Amico's like, hey, man, what is this? All the coaches come to like, what is this? And so they make a play to keep him. Sharon is ready to pivot right away and go get Lamar Morgan. But you use that entire experience to you guard this Tony Alford thing. You guard it like it's a national secret. Like nobody yeah. was getting wind of this one to blow this one up, because you can see how this, if this had gotten out early, Seth, this would be one that absolutely could have been blown up. You know, Ohio State gets wind of it, man. There's no way he makes it to spring ball, but because he was able to guard it like he did, he's able to get his man, and he was able to not just get the signs, Seth. He was able to get the whole playbook.
Ohio State probably finally has a complaint. I think they really do, because the people got so mad when Hilo went to Alabama, and they're like, oh God, you know, he's going to give him everything because he knows these guys so well. I'm like, if you were coaching that season, you were not there for the season plan. You were not there for like, what are we going to work on this year? What are we going to install, right? And sometimes it doesn't end up happening anyway. Michigan this last year wanted to install zone, and that was part of the plan going into the spring, and then all of a sudden, you know, obviously it doesn't work out. But you know a lot more. You know what they're thinking. You know what their plan is going in. And you get two practices into spring ball, you know, it's not like you know everything. But Alford knows that program, right, like backwards and forwards, and he knows what they wanted to do this year, what they were looking at when they got the players that they got. That is an advantage that he can absolutely share with his new employers. Now, by the time Michigan and Ohio State play each other, it's not going to matter, because you get a whole season of film. Everyone adjusts. Everyone changes. You have injuries. You figure out who you are in the games. So it's not going to matter in the game. It's not going to matter when Michigan plays Ohio State. But it is going to, like, help them along the way. Like, they're going to, you know, they're going to have Ohio State scouted better. I want to get back to Moore, though, because, you know, 38 years old, I think, is 2 years older than that, and you're like, okay, he's coaching it. You know, that's normal. And I was just talking about Fritz Kreiser to Dooley's class, and he was 38 when we hired him. Everyone's like, that guy's old. So, you know, what you're worried about is somebody taking over after a legend, right? That you have this transition from the big name to the, you know, his guy. And how much was the success of the program, the new guy versus the old guy, right? What are you losing? And the way that Sharon has navigated some of these curveballs, like you mentioned, you know, with Adegoke, I think bringing in Wink Martindale without having Martindale hire one of his guys, like, that had to have been a moment where Sharon's 38 years old, Wink's like, oh, I'm going to run over this guy and get what I want. And he's like, no, this is what's best for the program. And that's what we're seeing down on the line. And now we're seeing Sharon wants to make a splash, right? Hiring Alford, you know that's going to be front page news. You know that's going to be talked about, right? That's what you want to do. You want to stir the pot. And Harbaugh, I think, was strategic about when he came in. He wanted to do like the satellite camps, and he wanted to, like, you know, be showing up at kids' doors, and like he wanted to be in the news. When you're a new coach, you want to be in the news. Good news is, you know, you don't want to be in trouble, but like you want to be a little goofy. You want to like make a splash. And the best ways to do that are to get like a 5-star recruit, but also a 5-star coaching hire is the way that you can make headlines. Sharon seems to, it's way too early to judge, but he seems to understand what it takes to be, you know, a transcendent coach, not just a coach.
And Brian, and you know, it's no small thing. We need to make note of it. You got to be comfortable in your own skin if you're going to decide to make a play for a guy when there's still an opportunity to bring Mike Hart back, right? So Mike, a program legend, he has proven himself to be an outstanding position coach. You know, granted, he walked into a stable of backs like Jay had recruited. Jay had recruited his tail off.
Quinshon so Judkins didn't want to come here because it was too crowded.
Right. So you know, Mike got a loaded room, but he coached that loaded room well. You look at the development of Khalil Mullings, for example. And so, you know, he was very adept at identifying under the radar guys. There are a lot of redeeming qualities for Mike Hart that, you know, it'd be very easy, especially if you're trying to maintain program continuity in the program, to say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to use the opportunity that presented himself while he kind of looks around and weighs his options. Instead, I'm going to be open to the possibility that, oh, I got Tony Alford possibly want to come. I'm going to explore that. That's not a small decision on Sherrone Moore's part.
No, it's not. And I mean, it's striking because we had this real long delay before the defensive assistants were announced. Because they had to ask everybody, you know, about their vacuum experience and all that stuff. And Alford got announced like 2 days after it was announced that Mike Hart was not going to return. So clearly this has been in the works for a while. And he'd gone through the background check. He had done all that stuff. So that's like weeks of preparation to spring something on the baffled public. And, you know, I think that's also speaks well to what Sharon's been able to do. Is like, this kind of thing isn't something you should take for granted. You know, there's a lot of people who are just kind of flying by the seat of their pants, and this looks like a very well executed plan by Sharon.
Yeah, gotta be excited about it. And then in the chess game of it too, I just get every opportunity to stick it to the black guy. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. You can't give me enough of the sour grapes and the tears that are coming. Say what they want to about how valued Tony was down there. All of them have to concede they were shocked at this development. They may not think now. They may not think Tony was all that. That's what they're saying. But they all, including Ryan Day, were shocked that he was leaving for Michigan, because the dude's coach, Seth, he's coaching spring practice.
I think that they started to understand they were going to lose Tony Alford, and I, you know, you're going to have to ask him why he left, right? We've heard before that Chip Kelly's not fun to work for either. So I wonder how much bringing him in and kind of changing the culture of the offense is affecting, you know, what's going on at Ohio State that might be personal, not necessarily about Ohio State. They're not going there, obviously, though. They're looking at it like, man, we could lose this guy to LSU, and fine, you know, go work for Brian Kelly again. He liked you. That'd be one thing. For them, the hate is so strong that they can't imagine it, but we can imagine it because we've been there, right? We lost Greg Madison, who was going to be one of those guys who you see at Chrysler Arena, you know, and you're like, hey, Greg, good to see you. Like, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you're still around until he's gone, right? Like, Jerry Hanlon is still around. And Jerry Hanlon, everyone in Ann Arbor knows that guy, right? And it's like, okay, that guy was Bo's right-hand man, and he was one of those, and then he got to retire in Ann Arbor as, like, a legend. And Madison was, he gave that up to go to Ohio State and be the defensive coordinator again. Didn't work out for him, but it was that was a choice, right? And to make that choice, you are not just turning yourself into, you know, you're not just moving on in your career. You are putting aside like a bunch of people who are going to really care, right? Mm-hmm. Tony Alford is not going to be able to open a steakhouse in Columbus the rest of his life. And a week ago, he might have had that path, that career path open to him. And so something's got to be going on, I think. Be not just, you know, it could be personal. It could be like Chip Kelly's hard to work for. It could be a lot of things. But I think that there's got to be something going on at Ryan Day's program at this point where it's just like, man, if there's an opportunity to get out of here and go to Michigan, then and we know how it feels because that's how Michigan felt in 2018 when, you know, Al Washington, okay, they're calling him home. But you lost Greg Madison, that hurt. And that made us ask ourselves, who are we? What's our program about? You know, is Don Brown going to have a hard time hiring coaches? Like, we had to ask hard questions about ourselves that actually got answered in ways that we didn't want them to be answered.
Yeah, it's a great point and, you know, an interesting parallel there because was it Maddie having an opportunity to be a coordinator again? Yes. Was it Maddie got a $600,000 raise on top of it? Yes. Was it that Don was basically Buddy Ryan? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That absolutely was one of the things that played. I was definitely one of the things for Jim at the end of the round. Like Jim couldn't get. You would like to. Don was successful at the beginning. Let's not make the Don Brown era sound like it was all one way at the beginning. His defense was killer, and then they figured it out, and Jim's trying to get the dude chased. And it's like, hey, man, stay out this side of the building kind of thing, right?
Right.
So it kind of – the departure did help expose some things, and I do think – I agree with you, Seth, that this exposes some things for Ohio State, too, if they really want to look. But that there are other stories that happen. One that we will be talking a lot more about, and I want to spend a little bit of time with you, Brian, highlighting – is the return of Quentin Johnson. This is no small victory for the depth in the secondary. Depth that we all, you know, acknowledged was depleted with the departure of Keon Sabo. Well, now you get it right back with the return of Quentin Johnson.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting for the nickel spot because it does free up one of those three safeties to try their hand there. And I think we all know that losing Mike Zahner still is going to be a problem beyond whatever his on-field I'd made this play contributions were. Zahner still was absolutely crucial in getting everybody in the defense in the right alignment. And, you know, Jalen McMillan saying that he was pissing me off because he had all of our plays and he was getting Michigan the right coverages is the core of Mike Zahner still. And so if you're a safety, you are often sort of removed from this play, but when Zahner still was the nickel and he's up against a bunch formation, and we saw this in the national championship game, and he's signaling to the other two guys what they should be doing. Like, it kind of feels to me like on a modern defense, a nickel is the quarterback of the defense, right? So you talk about this as the middle linebacker being the quarterback of the defense back in the 80s. Now I think it's the nickel. And if you can move Rod Moore to that spot, and maybe Rod Moore isn't Mike Zahner still when it comes to coverage, but he's a great tackler, and we know that he's great at reading routes, understanding what's going on around him. Like, I think that might be something you look at. And you can do that because Quentin Johnson looked like a starting safety for most of this year. You know, he had a couple of like picks. He had a pass breakup that wasn't correctly adjudicated that I just went over for our book. And he blew up Igbuka, you know, in a play that I don't think anybody expected. But Johnson always had the athletic ability. He was a guy who tested really fast as a recruit and had a couple injuries and was coming through. And I just think he's going to be a six-year guy. He's gives Michigan flexibility. And if that doesn't work out and it is going to be McBurrows at nickel, you still have that ability to rotate through your safeties. And as we saw last year, Michigan had the deepest defense in America, and they had the second best defense of the millennium, according to the fancy stats. I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think getting Quentin Johnson back is really big for Michigan. So, you know, I was disappointed when Sab left, because I thought he was going to be a good player, and I thought that that depth was something that was really crucial for Michigan. And getting a guy back who I think is a plus Big Ten player after he had already announced a departure for the NFL draft. Again, we go back to people want to play for Sharon Moore. People want to coach for Sharon Moore. And like, I'm very happy to have him back, especially because I was high on him as a recruit. And that was looking bad for a while, but now it's
Yeah, man, I remember that Penn State fourth down. He was out there on special teams, and he's just and Quentin Johnson's just completely lost on a play where everybody in the world knows that Penn State is, you know, running a fake punt, and they get the and they get the conversion, and then the next play that you saw Quentin Johnson was against TCU, and I think he was the one who blew that sky coverage where the cornerback's blitzing and nobody gets over the receiver. And that was kind of where he was tracking. And then you saw at the end of last year, actually throughout the course of last year, I think by the Rutgers game is when I was saying Quentin Johnson's really earning his time out there, that he was a real major asset to the program and could really help them in a very difficult defense to learn. And then I just want to focus on like the type of NIL that we were talking about when NIL first becomes available, like the good NIL, right? Like where how it's actually supposed to work. We're keeping a guy. I don't know how much he would have been a major NFL prospect. He's more athletic than people realize, but I don't know if he would be. He'd been like a fringe NFL guy, right? The NFL has a lot of guys like that. They have a big pool of Quentin Johnson-like players, but there's not a lot of guys who could help a college team the way that Quentin Johnson can. He's the kind of guy who has that value to college that you would lose in our old system. And now that, you know, I think that this car dealership's probably going to make back $400,000 or whatever it costs them and some, right? Because everyone's talking about them. And so it works out for them. It works out for the fans. It works out for the team. This is exactly why the NCAA should have been okay with this stuff in the first place. You've added value to your product. There's a better product on the field this year, and the NFL would not have valued that guy as much as we do.
Yeah, and I think it's worthy of note. I mean, if you look at the recruiting rankings and you see that one time Keon was a five-star, I think from the outside, and maybe even some fans look at it as this is a net loss. But I think if you look at the snap statistics last year and you really pay attention, like this was at the core. Quentin Johnson was at the core of why Keon Sab left in the first place. This pushes him over the top that, hey, I'm rotating with Quentin Johnson. Quentin Johnson's playing over me as well. That was one of the things that kind of pushed him over the top at the end.
Well, I do think it's a loss because given how Keon Sab played in the national championship game against three wide receivers who are probably going to the top three rounds of the draft, like he's going to be a great player and he's going to blow up at Alabama next year. I think that's something I expect. And I don't think Quentin Johnson has that upside because, you know, Sab was a true sophomore last year and Sab and Johnson will be entering his sixth year. So I think you kind of have what you get from Johnson, but you know, to pull my inner Fred Jackson here, it kind of feels like Quentin Johnson is Josh Wallace, but fast. So he's had a ton of experience in college. He doesn't have as many snaps on the field as Wallace, but he was able to slot pretty seamlessly into that very complicated defense. And getting that back, getting back another guy who you know who can run all these coverages, like I think it just helps immensely. And I think we should talk about Pernell McPhee a little bit because Zenitz, as you mentioned, who's tight with these agents, is reporting that Michigan is considering hiring him for a defensive support staff.
So let's pause. This is a great kind of break point or halftime point in the roundtable because Zenitz did highlight a couple of the support staff likely hires for Michigan. So we will get into that on the other side. Stay tuned on the Michigan Insider. MGo Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
Clear on the radio, and Raven fans we're fans of McPhee. Good dude. Our football player.
Well, wasn't Rich brought after that kid?
Yeah, he's from Pahokee.
Yeah. I mean, he's like a Pahokee kid who went to JUCO, and then he was an all SEC linebacker, and then he was like an all pro. He had like a 10-year NFL career.
Hey, man. After,
I mean, like, that's a good profile.
It is crazy. to me, then this is a thing that we can get into here in a break. We won't have time in the show. But the number of coaches who are reaching out to Michigan and reaching out to Sharon to express their interest. Like, guys, you'd be like, wow, where did this come from? So one guy that I didn't mention before, and it just dawned on me. You know, when he was looking at the DB job, you know that when Dre Bly was still with the Lions, he reached out to Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about he is interested in being Michigan's DB coach.
Okay.
going from the NFL to college these days is a commitment.
It's a commitment, right? But, you know, maybe he saw that things were kind of going by the wayside with the Lions. Is the Lions, they went and got the Shaitans. They made a move at DB coach. But still, it's a this guy was just in the pro. He's going, Dre Bly can get another job. Like, he's going to be somewhere. He called Sharon to be like, hey, I want to come to Michigan. And Sharon, not wild by the name, Dre Bly kind of stays on track. Like, hey, I'm looking at Steve Adegoke. I'm looking at Lamar Morgan, and kind of stays on that track. And then the running backs, man, there were so many, like, name dudes interested in that running back's job. It was unbelievable. And some pro guys, too. So it's like, man, it's the national championship. It's the culture. But the point that you made that I think is worthy of hammering home again, Brian, like, people want to rock with Sharon. Yeah. That is really coming screaming through right now.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the chance to coach this roster is going to matter too, right? You're going to be the running back coach at Michigan. You're going to have, for the rest of your career, your bio page is going to mention Donovan Edwards. It's going to mention Khalil Mullings. It's going to, like,
I think that's more of a wink thing.
I mean,
Wink could run it, could walk into this defense, do nothing but drink coffee for 6 months. He's going to be back in the league, right? Like,
yeah, it's like,
I don't think that's what he's going to do.
Coach Mason Graham.
It's like, you look at this personnel, and you're like, jeez.
Right?
Yeah. Tough to screw this up.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I heard he walked in and was looking at some of the I may have mentioned this. Looked at the coverage concepts on the back end, and he's like, man, you guys are doing stuff I wasn't even doing with the Giants. Like, this is
it's true. This is
back on radio in about 30 seconds, guys.
I mean, that's the Mikey factor, right? Like, the main concern I have with Michigan going into next year is that Mike Sainer still is a genius, and that he's just simply unreplaceable. I don't think that's going to make their defense bad by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, if there's one thing that could go wrong, it's just that, like, you know, Mikey was the guy holding everything together.
Yeah, you made a great point when you said the nickel is like the middle linebacker, and I think that's a great point, because I think Will has that same kind of IQ, but he's on the corner,
right?
And
sometimes he's going to be isolated against three versus one, right? So he's not active every time like that.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side, back with the MGo Blog Roundtable. So, Brian, you were mentioning before we went to the break, Matt Zenitz, who does a great job of breaking a lot of this coaching news in tight with these agents. As you mentioned, Brian, he came through with another couple of guys that Michigan is targeting on the support staff side of things. And you mentioned one in particular, Pernell McPhee, before we went to the break.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a kid from Pahokee. He's not a kid, he's 35. But I remember him as a recruit, so he's always a kid to me. But he's from Pahokee. He went the junior college route before getting to Mississippi State, all SEC for a couple years. Had like a 10-year NFL career, about half of which was spent with the Ravens after being a fifth-round pick. And just a similar profile to the kind of guys Michigan has already been hiring. Like, they are young and they have come from different backgrounds. Like, I love the JUCO to, like, NFL linebacker path, because it just kind of feels like this is a guy who's going to be able to relate to a lot of guys. A guy who may not have been great at learning school stuff, but obviously has a mind for the NFL and a mind for football. So I feel like, you know, just another example of guys who, I mean, this guy could probably work for the Ravens as a support staff guy. I'm sure of it. But he's interested in working for Michigan as an analyst, and you know, maybe he's looking at Wink and he's like, well, when Wink goes back to the league, I'll pop up to a position coach job. And that, honestly, that feels pretty good to me. All pretty much everything that Chiron has been doing is like, we're going to be young. We're going to be smart. We're going to be getting after it. And with the exception of Wink, like every one of these guys is going to be in like the hustle phase of their careers where it's like, I have an opportunity here. And if I maximize this opportunity, I can be a coordinator. I can be a head coach somewhere. And, you know, McPhee, I think, is just another example of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time we mentioned McPhee on the blog, because when I was talking about Mike McDonald as a hire, I got into like how the Ravens were moneyballing their roster, the defensive roster, how they realized where they could spend in some places that the NFL was overpricing. And then like where they came out having to short was the linebackers. And what they decided is if they went and got smart linebackers, because their linebacker is very hard in their system. Junior Colson was a great player, and he came out like, you know, just barely positive his senior year in our charting, because it's just so difficult. There's so many things that you can screw up at linebacker. And that's what they did, is they found just smart guys. And you look at where those guys are today, you know, one of them's the defensive coordinator of the Ravens, and McPhee's another one of those guys where, like, they asked around who's really smart. Or in McPhee's case, I think he played for the Ravens before, and they went and got him back. But they asked who's really intelligent. And that's how they moneyballed that position, because they were spending all their money on the defensive backfield at the time. And to see these guys kind of coming back around again and to be part of that train, right? Like the Ravens are getting some of these guys themselves, but you know, Michigan is part of that train and part of that culture still, which is a good sign. It's like, you know, Chiron is not losing that Ravens connection, which was based off of his former boss's brother as the head coach there. And now it's like, okay, well, now he's one of the dudes, and he's going to, you know, and we're going to benefit from that as well. So it's another sign that we haven't lost everything that we had from Jim Harbaugh when we lost Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. And so the other one that Matt Zenitz highlighted was Lionel Stokes, who's being brought in as a defensive analyst, you know, working at Louisiana with Lamar Morgan, but he's ex-starting safety at Louisiana, been a defensive coordinator at Jackson State, DB coach at Jackson and Nichols. So brings you some familiarity with Lamar and some scheme familiarity as well, being at Louisiana. So this is definitely a comfort move for Lamar, which I think is going to be really, really important on that back end, because that was we've talked about this at length here on the roundtable. That was a major position for Michigan when it was when Doug Mallory was. I can't stress enough how big a role he played in Michigan's coverage variations week to week. So to have a guy that Lamar is comfortable with, that is familiar with the scheme, I think is very, very important.
Yeah, and he's a guy who is less directly connected to the Raven scheme that we're all hyped up about continuing. But we should remember that the guy who recommended Lamar Morgan was Minter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Minter is recommending this guy and he was like, I want to bring this guy along as an analyst, that seems like a move that you want to make, right? Especially because we're talking about a guy who was a defensive coordinator is moving back to a position coach. So, you know, it's just pretty much more of the same. It feels like this is getting guys on the up and coming up, you know, and when they're not poaching from Ohio State, they're getting the guys who are going to be the next DC at someplace, the next head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's all positive so far, and we'll see how the vibes hold up when we see what the quarterback play is like in spring.
Yeah, man, I think that he was going to be working somewhere other than Louisiana one way or the other. Like if Jesse were here and Clink had left, I think Lamar would be in the job. And frankly, I think if Clink doesn't go to the Chargers, I bet you Lamar would have been in a mix there, based on just how strongly he recommended Lamar to Michigan to Chiron. So that That's absolutely a huge, huge deal. And I, you know, I think it's pivotal. It's crucial because, you know, Wink is coming at this, coming into the fold with a different coverage, from a different coverage perspective, probably born mostly a necessity. Like he didn't have a defensive front like this. He didn't even have a defensive front like the Giants are going to have now. He's probably like, okay, so you wait till I leave to go get some passer. You wait till I leave to go trade for Brian Burns, right?
I mean, they had Thibodeau, right? Like, it wasn't like they were empty up front, but,
yeah, but this is different. Yeah. This side, I mean, Brian Burns, one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. Yeah. You put him on the other side. Now, you don't have to bring as much pressure. Well, he has that luxury here. And I think to kind of balance the concepts on the back end, I think Lamar is going to be a big, big part of that, this season. So that's one of the elements that I'm really looking to, because that is so big, so much a part of why this defense was so special. The complexity of it, you just don't see most college teams doing that, because it's tough to coach and you got to have a lot of high. I'm not saying other defenses are, I mean, but some teams have higher IQ players than others. And I think Michigan has a lot of high IQ guys.
I think that one of the most overplayed thoughts or ideas or whatever that we're discussing in among Michigan circles is that Wink's and Giants career makes him like a completely different defensive coordinator than Jesse Minter. We can show that, like, Minter likes to sit back a little bit more. Wink likes to blitz more. And that's been true across there, but only to a small degree. And the Giants, the necessity there was not just about, like, their pass rush. They were constantly being put at, like, the 40-yard line. And they're like, okay, guys, if they get a first down, it's points. So they were blitzing because that was the only way to prevent scores, right? They were in a do-or-die situation all the time, more than any other team in the league last year. Now, that was a problem with the Giants' offense, not a problem with Wink Martindale, right? He was responding to the situation that he was in. But also, you look at Michigan's roster this year. They're going to, you know, they have Will Johnson back, but Josh Wallace, you know, you had to protect him a little bit, right? And he turned out to be a great player at the end of the season, and we saw him, you know, matching up against Odunze, and it was like, oh, it's fine. But he was a guy that schematically you wanted to protect more, and they didn't really have a bunch of cornerbacks that they could be like, okay, you go out and do that. Well, Jair Hill should be ready this year. That's a guy that you, like, if you got him ready to go, you can play a lot more man, because you got Will Johnson on one side, Jair Hill on the other side. Where are you going to go with the ball?
Yeah, that's a great name, and one that I'm really excited about, because his athletic talent, I think, I don't think people have as much of an appreciation for it, because I don't think his ranking was on par with the caliber of athlete he actually is.
Well, he was a free safety in Kankakee. You know, he was not that's not where you normally look to see someone who's ready to go, because Will Johnson practiced against all the great receivers that came. He practiced against Braylon Edwards when he was like in seventh grade. Like, he knew how to, and he had a lot of experience going against players, because he came out of that system, right? He was going through the whole 7-on-7 program. His dad ran the 7-on-7 program for Detroit. That it was very different for Jair Hill coming into this system and having to learn everything that he had to learn. I was not surprised, even with the injury, I know, but like, I was not surprised that you didn't see him. And I was saying that last year when he came in as a freshman, I wrote about, I'm like, this guy is going to blow up in a year or two, but give it time. It's not going to happen right away, because it's hard. But if you do more man, it's not as hard. It's not as many checks, right? If you want to just go out there and play a little bit of man against some of the defenses some of the offenses we're going to play this year, you can do that and get away with it, whereas last year they tried that against Bowling Green and they got burned a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. You look at it this way, though. DJ Waller comes in, and I think the difference is, you know, DJ was really able to, you know, the complexities of the defense. Mm-hmm. He absorbed those a lot quicker, and it led to him seeing the field sooner. And, you know, DJ, if you had to slot it right now, you would say DJ would be the starter opposite Will. But I think this is a big spring and of course fall for Jair, because just pure athleticism, I think Jair is a cut above as far as that's concerned. Can he bridge the gap that was so obviously there from being able to knowing the defense standpoint? If he can do that, either the depth is just going to increase tremendously, or he could very well be that other guy, because Suge, as they call him, or Sugar, as they call him, he has some things that guys like Will are looking at him like, man, that dude, he different as far as athleticism is concerned. Can he put it all together and marry the mental with the physical? That's what I'm one of the things I'm gonna be looking for this spring.
Yeah, I you're gonna need more than two cornerbacks, right? Like, you're gonna need DJ Waller this year too. Waller just needed to find the ball, but you look at how many guys on this defense. Brian mentioned Nickel is like the quarterback of a modern defense. So many of the guys I talked about, Ernest Hausman as well, Rod Moore, they all played nickel for their high school teams. And DJ Waller's another guy where, like, when you go look at his high school film, where is he? He's playing in the slot. They're moving him to safety. They're moving him out at cornerback. They're moving him everywhere. And they have a lot of guys in this defense who, when they were in high school, their high school coach said, what am I going to do with this guy? I'm going to make him a jack of all trades. I'm going to have him learn every position and just have him move it so they can never tell where this guy is going to be. And when you're in high school, it's a lot easier to do that than in college. But it tells you what kind of players they have, that they were already thinking, we need guys who can switch their role from job from down to down. And that's not an easy thing to pick up on. And I think Waller probably started ahead because he got to play something more similar to what he was doing in high school.
Yeah. So, man, great day to be able to talk a lot of Michigan football, to be able to talk about those. But I love the Buckeyes. I love all the Buckeyes in my mentions. This is just to be able to engage with the Scarlet and the Gray like this. Nothing makes me more happy, more excited than seeing all you guys show up at times like this. Trust me. So
tell them everything's fine there. Everything is fine down there, guys. There is no culture problem. Ryan Day's fine. This doesn't mean anything. Michigan probably gave him more money or something.
Absolutely. As always, fellas, great time catching up with you, talking all Michigan football today with the big move there with Tony Alford, Quentin Johnson coming back, some support staff hires. And this might not be the last time that Sharon raised the opposition for a staff member. Not a on-field staff member, but a support staff member. So just a little food for thought there as we get on out of here. We'll see you tomorrow on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.